vibes.
You always sound sarcastic when you come out.
I didn't sound sarcastic.
You're always like, oh, we'll go for some good old fashioned.
No, pivoting. There we go. And now we're going to do this. I didn't sound sarcastic.
Yeah, I think you come across sarcastic. I'll give you sarcasm.
Show.
Yeah.
Yeah, those were the trailers. Let's do some film reviews.
That's exactly what you sound like.
No, it didn't. Yeah. I didn't. I'll give you love now. I'll give you love.
Yeah.
Those Super Bowl trailers. Let's do some great film reviews now.
It's sickly sweet.
I'm doing it over the top.
Those are the Super Bowl trailers. No, that sounds too cool. Yeah. That sounds too cool.
Yeah, it's not nice, is it?
Yeah, I guess those are the trailers.
No, way too nonchalant. Way too nonchalant. Guys, those are the Super Bowl trailers. And now let's do some film reviews.
That's nice.
Thank you very much.
All right, I'll actually put that in there.
Rounds on TikTok a while recently, but it also came into my head when I rewatched Band of Brothers. How do you think we'd fare in war, James?
Not good.
I don't think
this is like the conscription news that was actually not. We were never being conscripted. It would be very bad.
Podcasters don't make good soldiers.
I'd have to offer my services as like a film documentarian. That's the only value I could provide, or a chef.
really? Are you good enough?
What else? What? I have no other value.
You're too tall to go in a trench.
I would.
Head's coming straight up with a sniper. Up.
I would have to be a conscientious objector if it really got that bad. I would only fight if it was.
I'm not rolling my eyes at conscientious objectors. No. I was being like,
he can roll his eyes at me. It's very fine. Yeah. I think the only way I would like sign up if it's like the aliens.
Oh,
like
right.
Independence Day, mothership. That's the only way, and it's
existential
a threat. And it's a threat. I'm not going to just immediately get my rifle and take the aliens down. But there's no way I'm
imagining the pathetic podcasters standing in a field with a gun. I'd like to think. Well, I have asthma for a start, so there's no point
you're
in
out.
Me in a field.
I'm out. Out.
I would say at best you could use me for propaganda. Just, I'm like, media. I've worked in media.
Yes.
I've worked in production. Just.
You'd be like the spineless little media guys. Like, no, we need to show these.
We're working under the assumption that you have, you don't really have a choice.
You have to do, the only value I could provide is like being that guy. The bombs, shells, and I'm like Jack Black and King Kong. Just roll, get the shot.
I think I'd be the guy going around all the towns and villages, back home going, get your war bonds now, support our troops, out there in the field.
Marketing,
absolutely. Yeah. They need you. And it's their change. Thank you. Thank you, Barry.
I love it's like the TikTokers are like, you're really going to get us to go get ready with me today as we go over the top.
Like, they're like, call for air support. I don't really want to call him. Can I email him?
Yeah.
Can I email for air support? Yeah. No, you need to call him. Anyway, that was the reason I brought that up is because when I did my Band of Brothers review, I forgot to mention the scene at the end of the first episode. You've had the whole training thing and everything. Mm. And it ends with them getting on the planes to fly. They're in England. They're getting the place to fly over to Normandy for D-Day, and it's really well done because you just feel the tension in your stomach.
Yeah,
and it ends on this shot of just a sea of planes in the air, just descending over France. Yeah. And I was like, I'd shit my pants. You'd be absolutely scared and.
Jump out of a plane into northern France.
And all these, I mean, they'll be bricking it. And all the men in it are. They're boys. They're all boys and they're all just huddled together. And I'm like, that also takes some cojones.
Completely.
That I don't think we, sadly.
We just do not have. Our generation has many other values. But we just.
We've come to not place
too much
value.
We do not fundamentally have that in us. Is that a problem? I mean, don't let the Russians know.
They know anyway.
They know, yeah. It's terrible.
Anyway, let's move on.
Find ourselves in.
What an interesting time. May we live in interesting times.
I've never watched a Super Bowl in my life, George.
Never.
Culturally, it doesn't. I've no disrespect. Well, I probably do have some disrespect to the Super Bowl. I'm about to disrespect the Super Bowl. You know what I've always found weird about the Super Bowl as a Brit? Is that if, for example, my team were playing in the Champions League final, right? If Arsenal were in the Champions League final, and like I've just watched half of football, and my team scores right before half time, and then I had to watch like an hour of Usher. Don't get me wrong, I love Usher as much
it's
as the next
hour,
person.
The halftime,
the half-time
show?
Show is an hour long, 45 minutes at least. So then I'm like, I love. Don't get me wrong, love Usher,
you killed
but like,
the game.
If I'm there for the sport, I want to see the sport.
You don't be caught up.
Yeah. So I've always wondered, Usher like, it's your biggest, like, you know, American, it's like the pinnacle of American football. But it's just not.
I agree. I didn't. I had no idea it was that long. Now it makes
it's
sense.
It's a concert
and just
ads.
Squeezing Usher for 20 minutes to a quick little number and then he's off. Wow, because it's just it is kind of in that kind of very cliched. It's an American
stereotype.
It's the most
American commercialization of an event.
Yeah, American commercialization. No disrespect to any American listeners, but just it's a stereotype.
We culturally just don't get it.
I tried to watch an American football game when I was in Florida last year, and talking about commercialization. Yeah. You can't. It's almost unbearable to watch because there is no flow.
Yeah.
Not only is the game of American football a little bit stop-start, okay, that's fine, but anytime there's a stop, it's like, sponsored by Lucozade. Yeah. Cuts to an insurance commercial. There's nothing.
And we don't have in football. And I'm so happy this doesn't happen, is like free kicks. Forgive me for wrong, I did see this once when I was in Washington. It's like free kicks are brought to you by Gatorade. So it's like, and Peyton Manning lining up for the kick brought to you by Gatorade. And it's like, are the penalties brought to you
how
by...
You sponsor, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, every time there's a free kick, that free kick is actually...
They would sponsor individual blades of grass if they could.
Yeah.
Now, that's how...
It's flying up in slow motion. It's just like, shell.
Michelin, do you know what I find interesting about the Super Bowl as well is that... I was about to say if we're allowed to call it the Super Bowl because brands aren't allowed to call this... The name is like... copyrighted, so that's why all the adverts are called big game spots. They're not called Super Bowl commercials.
What is the Super Bowl?
The Super Bowl is the event. We're allowed to call it the Super Bowl, but I think in a branded context,
you can't.
If you've got an advert for the Super Bowl, you can't say the word Super Bowl.
It's a big game.
I didn't know that because like 10 years ago, there was an advert where they talked about it with Seth Rogen and Bob Odenkirk.
Yeah,
and they were like, "You're not allowed to say that." And they said, "What do you mean? Like, you're allowed to? It's a big plateau, the big place.
It's the big event.
Yeah, it's the big thing." But we will be talking about the Super Bowl today, very briefly at the beginning of this episode, to talk about the trailers that dropped. It's become true of the mass commercialization of the American Super Bowl.
Impossible to avoid.
Here they drop, you know, the big trailers, custom made for the Super Bowl event. Drop and the big blockbusters come out.
Boston laundry detergents fought the Alaskan table fixers.
It was the Kansas City Chiefs versus the San Francisco 49ers. James,
they sound the same to me. They're the laundry detergents. Yeah,
it's not right. Not often I actually know.
I've usually known it's like the
Patriots. I can't remember if it's the Kansas City Chieftains or the Kansas City Chiefs, but it's Travis Kelce.
Our American listeners in their Ford F-150s. So I'm just like, God damn it! But sorry, the World Cup is moving.
Our American listeners to be like the Dukes of Hazzard. Like, God damn! They just don't get it! anyway, sorry. We've just offended all of our listeners. No, we love you. We will be talking about Super Bowl. We'll be just talking a couple of reactions to the trailers that dropped.
Deadpool
Wolverine. Twisters, Kings of the Planet 8.
Not Deadpool 3, Deadpool and Wolverine.
Yes, a demarcation, a separate thing. Mm. In the same way that Paddington 3 will be Paddington in Peru, not Paddington 3.
Oh,
by the way, on that, do you know Sally Hawkins is not in it either? I'm starting to get a little bit...
She is Paddington. I'm getting a little... Like in the spirit of Paddington.
I'm getting a little bit nervous.
Are they drifting?
Well, there's no Paul King, there's no Simon Farnaby, now there's no Sally Hawkins.
I didn't know any of this.
Anyway, so we'll be talking about that. We'll also be talking about The Iron Claw, which is the big release this week. James reviewed that 2 months ago, just before Christmas.
Please go and
James
check it out.
Managed to go to screening, but it's out now in the UK finally, been out in the States for a while. I've seen it. I'm going to give you my thoughts on it. No spoilers here, don't worry about it. And... James, you've also seen...
The Settlers, new film from debut filmmaker Felipe Galvez-Habel. Mm. Sorry, I did want to check that. Not
Chilean?
Is it Chilean? Yeah, Chilean story.
Did you say Chilean or Chilean?
I literally thought this last night when I was collecting my thoughts in my shower. And in my head, I was going, Chile? Chile?
I think Americans say Chile, but I've always said Chile.
Chile.
But
like
I bet
I suppose
Chileans
pepper.
Would say... Chile.
But like, do I sound like a dickhead
Chile.
Being like, and of course in Chile,
yeah.
I was like, shut up, James, just Chile. Say Chile. Now I don't know what I'm going to say.
I think Chile.
Stay tuned to find out.
Also, as ever, guys, there is a bonus episode coming this week. We do try and put bonus episodes out every week. Sometimes they'll be a little bit delayed
due to the production
capacity of this show. Bear with us. But last week, our bonus episode was about One Day, the Netflix series that came out. Oh, and last week's episode, if you haven't caught up, was about three films, The Zone of Interest, Argyle, and American Fiction. Go listen to that if you haven't already. But the bonus this week is going to be about a movie called Fair Play, which has actually been on Netflix for a few months, but it came out during the strike, so no one was able to promote it. It's got Alden Ehrenreich and Phoebe Dinover in it. And it's a kind of murky sexual thriller set in New York. And we were invited to a screening last week where Phoebe Dinover talked about it. And we watched it and we thought, oh, we'll talk about that on the show. So that's coming out in a bonus later this week. But for now, we'll crack on with the movies and the Super Bowl trailers. So, James, many big trailers dropped for the Super Bowl this week. First one, Twisters.
Yeah.
The sequel to Twister. They've done what they did with Aliens and Alien.
This is what I was going to ask, because I know of the Twister from what year?
I want to say 1996 or 95.
Okay, so a while back
with
now.
Helen Hunt and Bill Paxton. Never seen it.
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
No.
I know it's kind of like very 90s, very iconic.
What would have been the VHS box art from walking around a Blockbuster at the time, because it's quite distinctive, yeah.
And it's kind of murky because it's got rain and clouds.
A good typeface for that era.
Yes. So there's now, 30 years later, a sequel to it starring...
spin the IP wheel at the studio. What do we got?
Do you know what?
What do we got?
They've got all the titles on the exterior wheel. They've got S. And whatever title they land on just puts an S on the end. We've got Titanics. Can we do Titanics?
What if there were multiple?
No. Okay. Twisters. Twisters. Yeah. So we have Twisters, which is about... tornado hunters and scientists and et cetera. I don't know. The trailer doesn't give you that much. It just gives you Daisy Edgar Jones, Glenn Powell, Daryl McCormack.
Nice to see Daisy Edgar Jones.
Yes. Yes. Rocking out with her impeccable American accent from my perception.
An accent comedian.
You have a seem to be sort of a chalk and cheese thing where she seems to be the scientist who wants to sort of harness and challenge these and sort of maybe break tornadoes. I'm guessing from the trailer that her team were killed by a big tornado and she now wants to destroy tornadoes with what seems to be in the trailer, nanobots.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Glenn Powell plays a very sort of cowboy-esque, in a role that 30 years ago probably would have been played by Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah.
He's now a tornado hunter, storm chaser. I'm all about it. There are two right there.
If you ever wondered, what if I tried to blow that there tornado up? Yeah, what would happen to it then if I gave it my gun?
It is brains and brawn together. Yeah. And literally in the trailer, they go, there's two of them, there's twins. And then you have the Twisters.
And then do you remember in the film The Day After Tomorrow when the two tornadoes merged to form a super tornado?
Do you know what? I've only seen bits of The Day After Tomorrow, which I'd be interested to know how that holds up.
I think it was good.
I remember them being stuck in a library.
They run away from ice. That it really works.
Well,
I think it really works.
Behind them.
So this idea that the cold is so cold that if you get stuck in that cold, you would immediately freeze to death. And it like sort of the icing effect like runs along the halls and Jake Gyllenhaal's like running away. Yeah,
that's
it's sort of like ices. And then you have to like sit by the fire and like close the doors to keep the heat. Brilliant. And then there's like people who like come out of helicopters and just freeze. It's quite compelling.
On Twisters, what I will say is I did think... Actually, it's quite refreshing to have like an eco thriller where the villain is nature. And it's kind of getting back to like, you know, a proper disaster movie that you used to get, you know, the Towering Inferno and, you know, the old school stuff. I know we've had like San Andreas and the Roland Emmerich stuff took the disaster film to just extreme lengths, like the steroid version of disaster movies. Yeah. And I like this being sort of like, can we just bring that back down to just being like set in like Oklahoma?
In Roland Emmerich prime Independence Day, that disaster movie would have been like one of the biggest films of the year.
Yes.
And in the following 10 to 15 years, those really kind of got relegated to be like, yeah, okay, you can go do your thing. But
like you've got... Gerard Butler's Greenland movie getting released straight to Prime.
Yeah, which actually wasn't that bad.
Yeah, I've not seen it. Did you see it?
I did.
Was it quite
good? I think it came out January 21.
Yeah.
Real lockdown film. I probably wouldn't have watched it. But thrilling and thought-provoking.
Yes, I think I will watch that when I'm sick.
Oh, yeah. A real sort of, you're not fully conscious.
A real sick movie in that sense.
Yeah, it's a real, like, if you watch it with a partner, we kept pausing it and be like, what would you do? And what would you bring? And then we became very aware of how unprepared we were to leave this place at very short notice with competent clothing and practical bags to like actually survive.
That's Twisters, where they run away from a tornado and they look to blow a tornado up. Even though I know it's like quite cynically resurrecting an old IP, in a way, I do quite want it to work.
It's not exactly like present in...
No, old IP.
Yeah, yeah, but I don't think people are like, yeah, Twisters, the
no,
old
yeah,
IP.
Absolutely. It's completely invisible in the landscape. But I do kind of want it to work in the sense that it's a dormant genre, like I said, the disaster flick.
Bring it back.
Be nice if that... I like Glenn Powell, I like Daisy Edgar Jones. I'd really like to kind of see that maybe work. So
I feel like Glenn Powell was... you know, not dormant, but he was sort of a star in waiting. And he must have just, his agent must have been like, you're going to shoot 6 movies in 18 months.
Yeah.
And they're all going to come out.
What I find is, well, he was like, I first saw him in Everybody Wants Some, the originally made movie. And then he was in like Hidden Figures, very small part. And he was just like around. And by the time he was in Top Gun Maverick, I was like,
I recognize that guy.
Yeah, he's been, and he was in Set It Up, the rom-com. He's like been around in things, but it's like since Maverick, they're like, sizzling. Okay, we're going to make you an A-lister now, maybe. Get that six-pack ready. Bod. You can't eat a carb for the next 5 years.
Let's do the Men's Health How I Trained for Film thing. Yeah.
Anyway, next movie is Wicked, based on the popular stage musical, which of course is a prequel to The Wizard of Oz, the wonderful The Wizard of Oz. James, I've never seen Wicked, have you?
No, I've not. I love that we're talking about the film adaptation of the stage show of the prequel to the film.
Two things on this, what I remember. First of all, forgotten films, Oz the Great and Powerful.
Yeah, that adds to the list.
Whoa.
Totally. You know, I started to write these down when they came to me. Doctor Sleep, the Shining sequel with
Ewan
McGregor.
That was probably not bad.
But no one talks about it. Completely came and went. Emancipation Already is straight in there.
Suburbicon, which was a George Clooney movie with Matt Damon in.
Yeah.
And Julianne Moore, which apparently was just butchered in the edit and makes no sense when you watch it.
They're so fun Wanted with James McAvoy and Angelina Jolie.
I would say that's forgotten. I see clips of that and that's been slightly memeified.
I've never seen clips.
It was at that moment he knew he was fucked. Like that's from.
Is
Wanted.
That from Wanted?
I think it is.
Yeah. Chris Pratt in that film.
Yeah, gets a keyboard smash across his face.
Yeah.
But Wicked. Also, can I just say, when you say it's based on the stage musical, which is based on the prequel to The Wizard of Oz?
No, it's just sort of.
Loosely speaking, right? I haven't seen The Wizard of Oz in a long time, but correct me if I'm wrong. I thought it was all in Dorothy's head at the end. Isn't it all a dream?
So she still in her up? Head.
She's been in a twister, literally. It's a twister anime. It's a twister. And she wakes up and she goes, and you were there.
She's crazy.
And you were there. And isn't the witch the woman who like told her fortune and like the lie to the face of the circus guy?
Yeah.
And I'm like, what do you mean there's a prequel to The Land of Oz? Oz doesn't exist. She had a concussion.
You're thinking about it more than anyone ever did.
Anyway, that stars.
No, I've never seen Wicked.
No, me neither. I had a colleague once who saw it 7 times.
Yeah, people do when they see it. They go,
You know, she plays. Is it Elphaba? Is that the green?
I know
one?
The same. I know like many famous songs.
Yes, and Ariana Grande plays the other witch. In it.
Sure,
But I'm also like, weren't there 3 witches? Because at the beginning of The Wizard of Oz, does Ariana Grande play the witch that gets crushed by the house? The Wizard of Oz. Dorothy opens it. There's 2 feet sticking. It's quite dark.
I've not got this fresh in my frontal.
Yeah. Why
lives,
don't you know your Oz lore? Anyway, look, that's also it. It's Wicked Part 1, I believe.
Oh, shut the fuck up.
Well, I'm just going to double check that because it hasn't said that in the trailer.
Please. Part 1?
Okay, hang on.
I take it back.
The first of a 2-part film. Yeah, stretch that out. Stretch that
sequel?
Money out.
No. Oh, my God.
Yeah, well, they're going to put more Wicked. Wickedly. Wickeder.
Wickeds.
Wicked.
Wicked.
Jungle is massive. Anyway, moving on.
If that's not the way what the credits roll into, they've missed the trick.
Wicked. The next one, I had no idea this film was coming out until recently, and I was quite pleasantly surprised, which is Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes.
Apes Together Strong.
We did.
Stronger stuff.
I thought Maltese trilogy was pretty
really
solid.
Competent films.
Rise of the Planet of the Apes surprised everyone.
Good performances, amazing. Some at the time, I think the Dawn CG was some of the best animal
mocap.
Digital in real live action recreations I'd seen. I thought it was genuinely breathtaking.
Really compelling, great performance by Andy Serkis.
Yeah, Jason Clarke as well.
I liked Rise. I really liked Dawn. I thought War was fine. A little bit disappointing. My thing with War was there was no war.
War felt like a real sort of just a bit of a side story. Didn't feel like it really continued.
Yeah.
Just a bit of a contractual sequel.
Mm. Anyway, that tied that series up with Caesar's arc in 2017.
Kingdom.
Now, 7 years later, they've moved on, which looks to be set, I want to say, like 100 years after.
Yeah,
like,
it's in that sort of
and now we're basically,
Tim Burton era. Of
we're back into the original Planet of the Apes, which is apes rule the world, apes on horseback, and the humans are the slaves.
Yeah.
It looks okay. I think I do enjoy the kind of ape, you know, the modern Planet of the Apes look of those films, and you know, the gorillas charging and all that stuff. I just hope it doesn't get, you know what it is, the human lead in this. And I was a bit like, you look like an actor. You don't look like a person who's been a human slave.
Right. Okay.
Straight away. You look like a model.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes I think when I watched that trailer, I felt like I'd already seen the film.
True.
So I saw a lot of the beats and like, okay, well, that person has this agenda and that person has this agenda, but they're meant to be on the same team. And I can already see the sort of third act in this film, which is fine.
And there's a problematic leader who believes society should be run one way. And then the underling who thinks, actually, I think we should probably do it this way.
And this human sort of puts all of it in context for the people there. I'm not, I mean, look, I think it's fine because I've seen this trailer now and it's going to come out later this year. If I don't see that trailer again till I see the film, fine. Chances are when I go and see a bunch of films, I'm going to see that trailer like another 6 or 7 times. So it's fine. I'll be all right.
We'll see it and we'll review it. And then lastly, the one that set the internet ablaze most of all is Deadpool and Wolverine. Not Deadpool 3, Deadpool and Wolverine.
Kind of like a comic book title there.
The trailer in which we begin with... we'd been with Wade Wilson celebrating his birthday with the cast you'll recognise from the first two Deadpool films, Rob Delaney's mustachioed character.
Still, when I
Ron.
See him without the mask on, I'm always like, oh God, Jesus. They really go for it on the makeup.
You've got Colossus there and, you know, the other characters. And then there's a knock on the door and it's the TVA from Loki, which I see as Kevin Feige going, how can we get Deadpool into the MCU?
What are people like?
We could do the TVA. That could probably
lovely. It's a lovely little portal into every other world, isn't it? The TVA. That's sort of narrative
The TVA snatch him up. They take him away and...
Matthew McFadden.
Matthew McFadden, Tom Wambsgans is there to take him through and do the Owen Wilson
thing. I just feel like he should have Greg behind him.
Yeah.
This is your Greg, voice. Why is the timeline not working?
That's actually
okay.
The Fox.
Well, let me go speak to the guy.
Everyone likes Fox, Greg. Anyway, basically says to Wade Wilson, blah, 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 you can be a hero now, blah, 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 welcome to the MCU, blah, blah, blah. Cue lots of meta jokes and a fair bit of action and some R-rated violence.
Acknowledging like the studio politics to the camera.
Yes.
Always fun.
People are very excited for this. It's the only Marvel film we're getting. We say we, like we voted for it. But
that's rare. We're used to 3+ a year and a couple of shows.
Are you excited for this?
Do you know what? I'm actually not... crazy about it. I will take it when it comes and I hope to enjoy it, but I just I'm humming at a very low gear for Marvel, and I think that's actually better than to be like dissecting it.
Do you know why I think
I have a bit of cynicism towards the project, to be honest.
I think what could be good is that this film might bring a healthy dose of it might be like a roast in the sense that like it might be the kind of taking the piss out of Marvel that Marvel needs right now. It might be the kind of reckoning, like bringing it down a peg or two.
Yeah.
So you have Deadpool come in and basically like trash the whole of the MCU, being like, this doesn't work, this doesn't make, and roast it, you know, like you would at a roast. And I think that might be quite good, quite cathartic for audiences to be like, yeah, MCU's so stupid. Then hopefully you can kind of move on. Earnestly get you to involve in a...
its own sentiment has to like sort of like post-rationalizing comedic eyes itself. That doesn't make sense. Do you know how like full Ragnarok was refreshing because it was like a new comedic take on it? We're going to sort of almost do that again with Deadpool, but be very sort of self-aware.
But are we going to be at the risk of the fact that Ryan Reynolds has basically done Deadpool shtick for 8 years now? Yeah. And like, I didn't mind the first one. I quite enjoyed the second one.
Some
people really dislike them and think they're stupid. They do make me chuckle. Yeah. I'm sorry if I'm not a child. They do make me chuckle.
I liked one more than two.
Yeah, I did like two. I liked the whole Rob Delaney joke about having the average guy there. And anyway, you know, Ryan Reynolds does it with conviction and he believes it. Of all the Ryan Reynolds movies where he does the fast talky, quippy thing, hello, that's that Ryan Reynolds. I would prefer him. He's best in Deadpool doing that.
Emma Corrin, rumored to be the villain in that. Rumored to be like an evil version of Professor X. This is all just sort of rumors and speculation, but
it's very much on the rest.
You see the back of a bald head in a chair, and it doesn't look
I missed that.
Yeah, it doesn't look like Professor X or McAvoy or
and
Patrick
of course
Stewart.
Hugh Jackman returning as Wolverine with the
classic X Men style.
Reminds me of the animated series with the yellow jumpsuit, with
90s yellow jumpsuit, pokey X-Men. Hair. Yeah, it's sort of important to remember that when Marvel was in its prime, comics-wise, not films-wise. Their biggest IP was Spider-Man, X-Men, and Fantastic Four. Those were always the ones that sold the most. Huh. And the Avengers were actually a tool to use those characters to sell Thor, to sell Captain America, which didn't do very well.
You pick up your lesser-known characters.
Exactly. And then the irony is that Marvel went bankrupt, sold the rights to Spider-Man, sold the rights to X-Men, sold the rights to the Fantastic Four. All they had left were Iron Man and Thor and Captain America, and they made stars and arguably like bigger cinematic blockbusters out of all of those characters compared to the other ones. And so now they almost like we fucked up those ones, or they were all dead or boring or interesting anymore. Let's sort of have a chat with Sony and Fox and try and just...
We burnt through our supply.
Yeah, we got a really successful thing. You want to make some money? Yeah, we can make some money. Let's just use the TVA and that. We'll make some money.
Anyway, those are the big Super Bowl trailers from this year. We'll keep out for those films when they come out. We didn't mention there were a couple of others in there, like Quiet Place Day One, which... We'll see when this happens with Quiet Place. Every time there's a Quiet Place movie, the more time I've spent with those... No, but it's more also just like, the more I think about the logic of these, the monster creation, the less sense it makes.
Yeah.
As like a Darwinistic point of view, I'm like, how can you have... If all these... How can you... Anyway, another time.
But I agree. The suspense in the Quiet Place Part 1 was not knowing about the world. Just you focused on one family in a really cool setting of that farm. And then, like in the end, they defeat them. That's fun.
Yeah, with white noise.
Yeah, but I think like if they don't defeat any of them in this film, that's more fun to me to have a monster that can't be killed.
Yes,
it's part of my thing about horror movies. Like, let the monster win more, or don't defeat the monster.
If it's Day One, you'd think it would win.
They won't know. Yeah.
Anyway, those were the Super Bowl trailers. We'll now get on with some good old fashioned film reviews.
You always sound sarcastic when you come out.
Didn't sound sarcastic.
You're always like, oh, we'll go for some good old fashioned.
Pivot. There we go. And now we're going to do this. I didn't sound sarcastic.
Yeah, I think you come across sarcastic. I'll give you sarcasm.
Show.
Yeah.
Yeah, those were the trailers. Let's do some film reviews.
That's exactly what you sound like.
No, it didn't. Yeah. I didn't. I'll give you love now. I'll give you love.
Yeah.
Those were the Super Bowl trailers. Let's do some great film reviews now.
Is he sickly sweet?
I'm doing it over the top.
Those are the Super Bowl trailers. No, that sounds too cool. That sounds too cool.
Yeah, it's not nice, is it?
Yeah, I guess those are the trailers.
No, way too nonchalant. Way too nonchalant. Guys, those are the Super Bowl trailers. And now let's do some film reviews.
That's nice. Like
Thank
that.
You very much.
All right, I'll actually put that in there.
James, The Settlers.
The Settlers, a film I saw this week. I actually saw a trailer for it when I went to go see Poor Things, and I thought that looks really good, looks really beautiful, I fancy it. I thought it had some very promising reviews from debut film director Felipe Galvez Jabel. Sorry if I butchered the pronunciation of that. It's set in 1901 in a region of Chile called the Tierra del Fuego. Basically, what this film is sort of has the setting of an American Western, but obviously set in a completely different part. A man called Menendez owns a vast, vast part of this land, this huge archipelago. And we see the opening of this film as he is constructing, or him and his team are constructing this fence that stretches across the landscape. They're essentially settling into completely uncharted land, trying to build an economy, trying to essentially develop the country as we understand it. What essentially happens is this administrative expedition turns into a violent hunt for the Onas and the Selkan people, which are one of the indigenous peoples of the Tierra del Fuego. And he says, there are savages on these lands, refers to them as Indians. I want you to go and take care of them for me. And he tasks this job to a guy, a British soldier called Alexandra McLennan, who's Scottish. And he basically is with this ragtag group of people who are just basically building this fence. And he needs to find someone who's good at shooting. He needs to find someone else who knows the land and knows the people. And he ends up being this man who's half native, half white, called Segundo, turns out to be a very good shot with a rifle. And he doesn't really have a choice in the matter, but he ends up having to go with Alexander McLennan across the land. You've also got this definitely racist American called Bill, who also accompanies them, and they're sort of this unlikely group of three who are tasked with going across this land. And the story goes on from there and tells a story kind of about the origins of how Chile became, or this region of Chile developed and became what it is today. There are a lot of scenes which are very difficult to watch, and it's definitely violent. You've got this very classic thing in cinema where you have an absolutely beautiful landscape contrast with very horrible scenes of violence. The design and the cinematography of this film, George, was just absolutely breathtaking.
Wow.
Just stunning. Like, so you have, if you've ever studied rules of composition, especially in landscape photography, I cannot praise it enough for having immaculate blocking, rule of thirds, leading lines, S's and twos that carry the eye down. I was just, many of the scenes are intercut with shots of this gorgeous, vast, uncharted, untamed land. And I looked at so many of the scenes, and what I really, really praised for it is that the blocking and the balance of every single frame was so well done that I felt like if you removed the dialogue entirely, I'd understand the drama in every scene, even if no one spoke. Wow. And I think that's a real praise to it, as just as a storyboarded. And, you know, we sort of, the first, it's 95 minutes long, this film. And the first two thirds of it, the dialogue is very minimal. It's very selective with what it chooses to say. And you almost go, I understand completely the dynamic from just looking at this scene. And the color is phenomenal. It's in 4:3 aspect ratio, and just every single time that camera was put in a new location, I just thought, wow. Was it a little bit too perfect? Maybe. You know, sometimes people criticize the films of Tom Ford. I love them, but for being almost a little bit too perfectly manicured too and fashion editorialized. And, you know, I think Tom Ford's films sort of have a nice quality to them, but I sort of almost understand that criticism. Sometimes I was looking at this film, and it looks like a gorgeous Ralph Lauren high concept magazine editorial outfit. I mean, like, they were just beautiful leather satchels, fur wool. Stunning.
Is that ever problematic? Does it ever glamorize?
It's not glamorized. It's just really intentionally blocked and placed. So everyone is so. You could just cut to a wide of people traveling in a campsite, and the way in which people are leant up against a tree, sat by the fire, stood smoking a pipe. It feels like a painting. And I actually, considering what it's trying to do, admired its clarity and its precision in that. And I just thought, beautiful. I think you've got some really great performances. You've got Mark Stanley, who plays Alexander McLennan, Camilo Arancibia, Benjamin Westphal, and Sam Spruill's in there as well. The film does this really interesting thing where sort of about two-thirds of the way through, we cut forward 7 years in the future. And I had that classic thing where I'm in the cinema. Two people go to the toilet right before that seven years later moment happens, and they come back and the film really shifts gear. And they came back in. I'm like, none of the rest of the film is going to make sense to you because you don't understand it. Anyway, the film really changes in the last sort of 20, 30 minutes. And we get dialogue becomes way more important. It leads to an ending, which I found really sort of quite powerful. It's 95 minutes long, which is short, but it feels much longer than that. Not because it's bad, but more so its pacing, especially in the first 2 minutes, is very decisive and very slow and very precise. But if you'd put me into that film blind and told me it was 2.5 hours, I might have believed you just because it was very slow and decisive. But what I will say, it's very powerful. It's gorgeous to look at. Like thematically, a lot of what's important happens outside of the frame, but you're left with this very strong feeling when you leave the cinema. And there's a really fantastic quote around the middle where this guy says, the wool you carry has no value because it's stained with blood. And this is really great idea that, like, no matter what advancement and economy and productivity you bring to this nation, it's always been tainted because of the way in which you systematically carried out a genocide for indigenous people. And it's really thought-provoking without shoving it in your face. I think if you are someone, you know, we get emails sometimes about people wanting to find something that challenges the way in which they watch films and the way in which they're confronted with imagery, and you're looking to palate cleanse yourself from studio-sanctioned films, I would really recommend The Settlers to go and watch it. It's not an easy watch, but I think it does what a lot of really great historical films do, which is that it puts you in a time and place and makes you feel like you're there. You learn something about a period of history that you didn't know before. And when the film ends, you actually want to go and seek out a little bit more about that subject a bit more. And I think it really succeeds in that sense. It's very, very good.
So where can people see that? At cinema?
Yeah, it's showing in cinema. Great. It's not got the biggest release because it's not the biggest film, but I saw it at a cousin. And yeah, it's still got screenings. So this is recorded on the day before this comes out. So you can definitely go and see it this week. Fantastic. Strong recommend.
So if you guys have seen, is it Settlers?
Or The Settlers.
The Settlers. If you guys have seen The Settlers, let us know at hello@pulpkitchenpodcast.com. Sounds like a very visually striking film.
Yeah.
I'm actually quite keen to check that out. 95 minutes as well. Always a sign.
95 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah, let us know.
I like what it did with sort of its dialogue flip. Dialogue not so important. Visuals are much more important. And this really great dialogue that sort of it really leans into it and it really goes for it and it ends. You know that nice little adjustment when the film's doing it switches you up. I enjoyed that and I thought it was very very disciplined, tells the story with a very steady hand.
The Settlers.
The number of times I wanted to pause it and just admire the frame and I went, I want that as my desktop wallpaper. I want that as my desktop wallpaper.
So let's do The Iron Claw, which, as I mentioned, James has already reviewed 2 months ago. If you want to go and check out that review, I think it was before Christmas. It was the same episode where I did my review of Poor Things. So
yes.
If you want to listen to that, you can check that out. I've now seen it, so we can discuss it between the two of us. The Iron Claw, directed by Sean Durkin, who made Martha Macy May Marlene and The Nest, two movies that I really like and I recommend it to people going to watch. The Iron Claw, which I'm describing as Foxcatcher meets Little Women.
Yeah, Foxcatcher is definitely a vibe with Iron Claw.
And
yeah.
I think Little Women.
Yeah, yeah.
I think there's a whole sort of sibling, yeah. Those two things are in there. Although, we'll get onto this, but Foxcatcher, which is about a different type of wrestling, which is Greco-Roman wrestling, which is this, which is entertainment wrestling. So, the plot. It follows, based on true story, the triumphs and tragedies of the Von Erich family, who are presided over by the patriarch Fritz Von Erich, played by, I have to say, a fantastic Holt McCallany.
Yeah.
Probably, of all the great performances in the film, probably my favourite in the whole film, I have to say. Really, really excellent work. We see Fritz Von Erich at the beginning of the film in a sort of at a younger age, this sort of gorilla of the ring. And he is a very much a domineering figure, tells his children, tells his family, you know, this is our destiny, this is what we're meant to do. I missed out on, you know, a football career, but we're gonna win the championship. And then we cut forward to the early 1980s, where Fritz Von Erich is retired, but presides over his children, who are all vaguely involved in sport. You have the eldest child, well, second eldest child, Kevin, played by Zac Efron, the eldest child. Actually, the eldest brother died when he was 6 years old. And it's this sort of tragedy that looms over the family. You then have Zac Efron is the oldest, and then you have Kerry, who's played by Jeremy Allen White, who is a very competent and successful discus thrower and has a shot at the Olympics coming up. You have Harris Dickinson as David Von Erich, who is younger but also quite mature and because he's not carrying the pressure of being the oldest brother that Zac Efron's character is, he has been able to have a bit more gift of the gab, is more naturally charismatic in the ring. And you also have Stanley Simmons as Mike Von Erich, the younger brother who isn't really interested in wrestling at all, is much more interested in music and is very much like the young brother. You've got Maura Tierney as the mother, Doris Von Erich, and you've also got Lily James in there as well as a sort of love interest for Kevin, Zac Efron's character. And yes, it follows the sort of the wrestling careers of these brothers and how it kind of takes a hold. But it's called The Iron Claw, and James mentioned this in his review, for two reasons. One, it is the signature move that Fritz Von Erich used in the ring that his sons also use, of pinning someone down on the face and inflicting maximum pain. It's a great sort of entertainment showstopper. But I also you hold it up, you show it to the crowd. I also don't think it's too glib to show that the Iron Claw is also the hold that Fritz Von Erich has on his family and on his sons and the way, the kind of the existence and the life they lead. Let's start with. I was pretty happy with the Iron Claw. I was pretty impressed with a couple of things. I think everyone is doing great work. Mm. I think it's well directed. I think that the performances are great. I think Zac Efron is being very tender and shy. Harris Dickinson the dynamics between the brothers worked. I think Holt McCallany is fantastic. I do think this film and this type of film 10 years ago would have got many Oscar nominations.
Yeah,
and I think Holt McCallany would have been a supporting actor contender. I do think that this kind of evil, conflicted presence. But what I like about him in the film is that whenever he was on screen, I felt threatened and I felt in danger and I felt sorry for the boys. I will just say that there are two things that kind of stopped me from oversharing it with praise. I've seen lots of people being very effusive about it. There's just two things coming back. One is the thing that happened with you, which is that I just don't understand wrestling.
Thank you.
Okay. And it's not. And it might be that because you pointed it out, I was more aware of it. But I'm like, this isn't like Foxcatcher, where they're actually competing for a thing. This is slightly stage managed and performance based in the ring. I'm like, okay, that's fine. And, you know, they're training up for it. And Zac Efron is wearing this like almost uncomfortably swollen.
Yeah.
Torso. He's not wearing it. He's beefcaked.
He literally
up.
Is.
And
he looks like a tied up turkey.
He looks like a dried out sponge.
He looks like a Stretch Armstrong.
Yes, he's just he looks like the Thing actually from He-Man. He's kind of like
He-Man, Thor.
Anyway,
Lou Ferrigno in the Hulk.
Yes, absolutely. He there's a point, quite frustratingly, where Lily James raises this question. Pam, the character, raises this question with Kevin. And I thought, great, this is where the film's going to address it. And he answers it in a way that just does not answer the question.
Yeah, she's
and
like, it's our thing, right?
The problem is that for the rest of the film, I'm like, I want to invest in the stakes and the drama that you're going through. But I don't understand how it works. You've shown me a scene in which behind, in the locker room, you and your opponents are deciding what moves are going to be played.
Yeah.
But then you've also shown me a scene where you're getting frustrated at the fact that you didn't win and a fight didn't go well. And I'm sorry, that was really distracting for me.
Yeah.
It really kind of held me back because I'm thinking, is this sport or is it performance?
Did you not know you were going to lose?
Yes. It's an unnecessary distraction. Yeah. And maybe in America, like it just doesn't... this film will probably play better in America because people just understand that and know that better. But I have to say, from my perspective, there was an unfortunate distraction. I also think the thing is to say is that the story really is very extraordinary and very interesting. And the whole thing plays kind of quite well as a Greek tragedy. And there's actually, I won't spoil it, but there is, we were just talking it off air, there is a moment of Greek mythology symbolism used, which I thought was quite touching. But... And when I did some reading after the film about it, there's so much more that just wasn't in the film. You know, necessary dramatic license means you have to cut things out, but I was quite extraordinary. I mean, just off the cuff, there was actually another brother that has been omitted, exercised from this film, just, I guess, for the sake of dramatic space. But the thing is with that is that I liked all the dramatic ingredients that were there, but because there was so much to cover, I felt like I was never... I was getting glimpses of characters and glimpses of interest, but I was kind of underserved on a lot of things. I really wanted more interiority to characters. Jeremy Allen White's character is a perfect example. Kerry, you know, gets a shot at the Olympics, which is then denied because of, you know, geopolitical things that are happening in the 80s. And there are a lot of times with his particular character who comes into the film about halfway through.
Yeah.
And I was like, I want to know what's going on inside your head. And the same with Harris Dickinson's. You get glimpses, but I wanted more interiority because I think they've got great dramatic potential. Even Lily James is underused and Maura Tierney's character is kind of underused. I wanted more. We're giving glimpses, good glimpses, great dramatic moments, but I just couldn't help think that I would almost have preferred to have watched a 3-hour version of this film where I really got to know and understood each character. Or
a great miniseries,
which is, I know it's a bit of a lazy criticism these days, but the thing is, when you've got such great dramatic potential, so many different perspectives, so many different characters, I enjoyed that as a series to kind of draw that out. But that said, the longer the film goes on, the story is extraordinary and the emotional kind of punches, although they didn't land with me at first, they did start to build. And I have to say, I thought the last scene was really well pitched, emotional, lands its punch. Anyone who has family, but particularly brothers, I mean, I have a brother, that it just really, really well. Also ends on a fantastic song that's written for the film. It's rare that we often shout out to films that are songs that are purpose written for that, but it ends on this track, and I thought, wow, that's amazing. And I looked it up, and it's written for the film. It's fantastic, works perfectly, and that ending, in a way, did a lot of remedial work to kind of just push the film just up a little bit. So it's interesting. It's got great performances. Sean Durkin is a good director. He can do a lot with showing a little. I just wish he'd shown more, frankly.
And which is a good criticism. It's like, I actually would have liked a little bit more.
And bizarrely, there was this thing where you're always aware. I sometimes got a bit lost about where to pitch the success of the Von Erich family, because the father will always make them think that they are on the cusp of greatness, but never achieving it. That they're trying to get this big title, but they've never had it. So I got this kind of sense that they're like minor players in the world of wrestling. They're almost greats, right? But they live on a massive ranch and they seem to be very popular. And then when certain events happen, there are lots of people out to sort of support them. And then at the end of the film, it mentions, you know, there's a little postscript where it says, all the Von Erichs, you know, inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame. They're regarded as one of the greatest families in American wrestling. And when I read up on them afterwards, they were more successful than I think was conveyed to me in the film.
I think they were big regional stars of wrestling.
Yes.
And it was trying to get themselves into that national thing.
Yeah.
So they were succeeding in their own sphere in Texas. And it was about graduating.
That's
into
right.
And the WWF at the time wasn't.
Yes.
It was like the establishment of these two things. And they were maybe going to establish what it was. I think
that's true.
That was probably it.
And there's even, sorry, there's lots of interesting dramatic threads. There's something with between Kevin and his father, between Kevin and Fritz, towards the end of the film where they're watching TV, and Kevin sort of says, you know, I noticed something about, and I can't say it because it's a spoiler. And I'm like, that's very interesting. That's actually a major thing, but that's only given that kind of line for detail. So it does, with what it does, with what it gives you, it's very competent and it's serviceable. I just think actually it almost could have been better with all those dramatic ingredients.
I thought the same thing. I thought that the tracks laid for such a long part of the film laid a great foundation for great tragedy. And all of those brothers to me, especially when you've got four brothers, they all feel really distinct and individual, and I understand all of them and their struggle. I think it's really hard to do that when they kind of look very similar and are doing the same thing on screen. So when you do get to the moments where different things happening to different people, some of them just felt really, really rushed. And I'm like, hang on, what happened?
Yes.
And oh my God. And now I'm sort of still processing it, but the film has moved on in time and moved on to the next thing. So that's the only thing I felt like I was a little bit playing catch up. But as you said, the ending is very sad, and it really does work, and it does land where it needs to.
Yeah. And I can think of individual moments that I think are very, like I said, competent. It's a competent film.
Yeah.
It just could be greater.
And then you've got like scenes, which you're saying, where it's like, I got to train for the fight, for the big thing, and I'm still scratching my head because I've got this tragedy on one sense, but I'm scratching my head being like, but why are you training in that way? And do you not know? And it is, unfortunately a bit distracting. I did go on a bit of a sort of, we put the audience out, the question out to the audience, how the hell does wrestling work, when I reviewed it.
I don't know if anyone write in. And people give different answers, which kind of shed a bit of light, but no one quite knows. I would say, if I can be glib with the comparison, like the film, I felt like I was always on the ring side. I was never in the ring.
Very good.
So I was a passive spectator, interested, but I was never actually where I wanted to be. Yeah. In the
and
ring.
I do think Zac Efron's physicality, It's very much present, but it does work in the fact that he carries the pressure of everything on his shoulders, and his shoulders are so big because he is strained and under pressure and forcing himself into this position. Yeah. There is an element of that which I think is very interesting. He's intentionally physically contrasted to everyone else. He bears the brunt of the Iron Claw more than anyone.
It has that kind of mythology, Greek mythology kind of
element to it.
I've said everything. I don't need to say anymore.
Well, guys, let us know if you had any other thoughts on just wrestling in general and the Iron Claw. We'd love to hear them as always. We did get a couple of emails closer to the time, but we'd still love to hear your thoughts. Send them into hello@popculturepodcast.com.
It's also, I just realized, it's the first time I've ever seen Harris Dickinson in anything, because I didn't see Scrapper.
Scrapper's
didn't see The Triangle of Sadness.
Yeah.
And I didn't see The King's Man. And I hadn't seen Beach Rats. But
he's so hot right now.
Very much enjoyed him. Very much.
My sister just watched Scrapper because I recommended it to her. She watched it on a plane. She said she really enjoyed it.
Oh, good.
That's all. That Harris Dickinson. He's in the most interesting scenes in The Triangle of Sadness. But that film loses my interest the more it went on. But yeah.
The Iron Claw.
Guys, we are about to go into our email section. We have just realized for about 20 minutes, George's camera wasn't rolling. For all of you listening, business as usual, the audio is recording fine. Just for the visual, you just have me for 20 minutes, but George is here. You'll be able to hear him.
Yes.
We are now recording on his camera, so you'll see George in the second half of the emails and obviously the game, but just wanted to say that for people who are watching. I'm not just being selfish with the edit. And I want it to be all of me.
It's all of me. Well, see you in a bit then, guys. See you in a bit. Here are the emails.
Anyway, on the Iron Claw, Taha writes into the show, friend of the show, and says, hello, George and James. I just finished watching your episode on the Iron Claw. I'm catching up on the award season films as they are coming out here and thus going back to listen to the episodes I skipped over. Firstly, to address James's question and now George's question about progression in wrestling.
Yeah.
While I'm no wrestling aficionado, I did watch it during the majority of my teenage years. I agree that the film never properly explains how these people progress upwards, but I still think it depicts that progression fairly well. Professional wrestling is basically a stunt person show-off where you progress not only on your athletic prowess, but also on your charisma, your ability to keep yourself relevant to audiences, and of course, on your ability to keep returning to the ring, even after enduring many beatings. This is particularly important as even though the events may be scripted, the risk is very real, something the film depicts multiple times through all four brothers.
Can I just say on that? I believe you.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think as an audience, we need to see the deciding factor of what, you know, if it's a football film, football, English football, soccer, if a ball goes into the goal, well, they've scored a goal. We know that's a victory. If it doesn't, it doesn't, right?
And the characters are stressed about their progression.
And also, there's one shot where Jeremy Allen White is like covered in blood. And I'm like, how? Because they don't show how. I'm like, how did that happen? Isn't it all scripted? How did you get bloody? And he's like in the locker room, like looking dazed afterwards. I'm like, but why are you bloody? How can you get bloody in some fights and not in others?
If you and me are going to wrestle, right, and we plan our moves and we plan who's going to win, we'll do this thing, then this thing, then this thing. Can I double cross you by actually in the ring, like messing with you a bit and taking you down? And like, I said I was going to do this, but actually,
but then the hits, all the punches are not real punches. And
if you decide to do a wrestling move on me, do I have to? Do I have to cooperate?
Because like when you do the body slam,
I've gotta be slammed by you.
Like a do you, is it like the rules that you have to go along with it? Otherwise, you're both gonna get injured. I don't know.
Moreover, I found this depiction of the problems in the sport very honest. There are numerous accounts exist of even top level WWE wrestlers having to push themselves to the extremes to ensure their careers, only to face enduring long-term problems without sufficient financial means to address them. Mm. This is very true of boxing, all combat sports.
It's head trauma, isn't it, ultimately?
Totally. However, while I did enjoy the movie overall, I do agree with your assessment that the emotional punch does not land. Some of the punches don't land. I feel this is because the script lacks a certain discipline. I feel the film should have taken more of an artistic liberty to streamline the film further to ensure the audience doesn't become desensitized from tragedy after tragedy. Also, I never feel the long building tension from Fritz's treatment of his sons is given the cathartic resolution that it needed. Instead, we are treated to a confrontation that barely lasts 30 seconds. I loved Zac Efron's performance in the film, who basically looked like Lou Ferrigno's Hulk, and genuinely feel that a better script could have made his role even better. After watching the film, I did start thinking about other actors who had incredible performances acting against type. With Heath Ledger's Joker and Leslie Nielsen in Airplane, I'm wondering if there are any others that you both particularly enjoyed. Anyway, sorry for the rather long email. As always, I love the podcast and always feel while you come for the film discussion, you stay for the remarkable impressive impressions. Best regards, Taha.
Thank you, Taha.
It's interesting because Taha said reduced script, whereas we're actually longing for something
that's the
a bit
thing.
More
I think
fleshed
if you reduce that story, you reduce what makes that story so interesting and special, basically. I would actually like to go deeper. If you reduce it down, I think you take away of the special ingredients. In terms of actors playing against type, just since we just mentioned it, Steve Carell and Foxcatcher.
Totally, yeah. Yeah.
In fact, even Channing Tatum in that movie is kind of against type.
Yeah, Mark Ruffalo is the only one who I'm like, Mark Ruffalo.
Yeah, Mark Ruffalo, yeah.
He's quite a transformation in that, Mark Ruffalo. Physical.
And Steve Carell.
Yeah.
I found that interesting about Steve Carell in that film because that was when we were like, oh, Steve Carell, serious actor. Anytime Steve Carell does a serious movie role, I'm like, oh yeah, he can do this now. Yeah,
he's very good.
He's been liberated from the Michael Scott era.
He's great in The Big Short as well. He's funny in The Big Short, but he's frowning the entire time.
He is angry. He's quite good in Beautiful Boy with...
I've not seen Beautiful Boy.
Messy, really messy film.
Right.
But he's very good in it. Thank you, Taha.
Thank you, Taha. George, should we go through some of the emails that we get sent in to hello at Pop Kitchen Podcast every single week?
Absolutely. In fact, before we get to the emails, I'm actually going to read out a YouTube comment.
What?
We do get some interesting YouTube comments, and I would like to read this out. I'm also slightly biased because this is left by Bob, who I went to school with. I haven't seen in many years,
Bob.
Hi, Bob. How are you doing? Very funny guy. He left this comment about the zone of interest, which we reviewed last week.
Please go and check it out. It's great.
Bob said this, personally felt that the zone of interest lacked a story. I saw this film as a rejection of previous dramatic Holocaust attempts on screens, Schindler's List, The Pianist, etc. But I actually found this film left me slightly cold. I agree with George's minor point. I understood and appreciated the juxtaposition, but within the first 10 minutes, I didn't find that the film did anything particularly interesting with the Hoss family after that initial setup. That being said, the sound design in this film is incredible and the constant churn in the background is nauseating, intentionally so. Yeah, I mean, I think some things, it's deliberate that we don't get a lot to do with the Hoss family, as we talked about last week. It's not about them. It's a framing device. And I do think that the zone of interest, I think it's incredibly powerful. But the more I've thought about it and actually talking to other people, I think some people are chafing at the formal
dryness
exercise. Yeah, the dryness of it. They see the point of it cerebrally, intellectually,
but
as a aesthetic, cinematic experience, it can be a little...
It almost leans on the historical exhibition as cinema, like a capturing of a place in time, but presented to you cinematically. And it's not traditional in terms of here's a story, here's... Like I told you, there's no protagonist or antagonist really.
No,
it's more about the setting is what carries you through.
It is. It's kind of like it's a statement of fact. I think the word exhibition is quite apt because sometimes it almost felt like
a commissioned cinema experience,
a commissioned an exhibition you'd see, a historical exhibition,
yeah,
art exhibition. Thanks, Bob.
Like a cinematic exercise to make you feel empathy towards a situation and a moment in time and a place.
Which is a shame if you're aware of the construction, if you're aware of the contrivance that can sometimes go against any sort of emotional truth you're trying to get to.
And Rudolf Hess and his family, I said this in a review, they're used as tools, not as characters.
Yes.
Like, they never felt like they were being humanized or meant to sort of feel empathy.
Which they shouldn't be. But as a result, if you're watching a tool on screen, sometimes that's not compelling for an audience, evil or not evil, for a long period of time.
Sometimes you just want a Scorsese voiceover, you know? I take 2 in the morning and 3 in the afternoon.
Anyway, next up on the emails.
This next one is from Adriana, who writes into hello at popkitchenpodcast.com, just like you says. You can. And
you says.
And with subject line, I am not okay, ... With Oppenheimer getting all those Oscars, Oppenheimer is my newest...
I'm not okay with all those Oscars getting...
I totally didn't connect that. I am not okay, ... With Oppenheimer getting all those Oscars. Oppenheimer is my newest controversial opinion. For me, I literally said this last week. People either think Oppenheimer is fantastic and incredible and Nolan's best film, or they're like, that was shit. I think you and me are like having bits in the middle where we think parts that we think are really great problems. I just do not hear anyone else saying it's middling.
No,
everyone says it's fantastic or it's terrible. Yeah. Anyway, for me, it's remarkably bad. The score is awful, distracting, and at times physically painful. The acting is just average, exception made to Robert Downey Jr. The story is all over the place. It lacks focus and intention. It is a fake biopic because there is so little of Oppenheimer in it. I would dare to say that Einstein is more of a star.
Isn't it in every scene?
I remember saying out loud after the credits went up in the theater, someone needs to confiscate Nolan's license to make movies. Come on, move on to another profession, mate. I mean,
harsh, and I don't agree, but you're very entertaining.
Cillian Murphy's in 85%, 90% of that
90%
film.
Of the film. The only scenes
Downey Jr. Not, scenes with
the
Oldman,
only
right?
scenes he's not in are the Downey Jr. black and white scenes.
Yeah,
he's in everything else, and his performance is very good.
Yeah,
that film doesn't lack intent. It has purpose and it has intent. How it executes it is up to you, but I don't think it.
Yes, he likes deconstructing time and space and all of that, but you still have a job to do. Tell a story. You can deconstruct it, but then you need to build something interesting, compelling, and with good sense of composition. Otherwise, it is just destruction. Jesus Christ, Adriana.
No, go for it. I mean, you're done to opinion, but
love
wow.
It. All right, otherwise you it's just destruction.
I am become reviewer. I become the destroyer of Oppenheimer.
Close up on Adriana's face. As Mark Kermode walks away. All right, that being said, I feel better now and can comment on the good stuff. Yesterday, my husband and I went to see Pour Overs, Poor Things, Dinner, then Holdovers. Very good.
Oh, that's a Pour Overs. Begin with Poor Things.
And finish with the Holdovers.
Like,
so
instead
different.
Of Oppenheimer, I like that. I think you definitely have to finish with the Holdovers.
Yes, I think so too.
Could probably kind of
Holdovers lends itself to an evening watch, and we could watch Poor Things.
I think Holdovers could also work in an afternoon. I think Poor Things is very much like Saturday night. You're open to doing weird and kooky things.
I want to watch Holdovers at Christmas.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Yeah, I will be watching.
I'll save it.
The Holdovers would be a great double bill with Little Women as new cinema films.
Yes. Poor Things, Dinner, then Holdovers. I very much agree with the comments on the mesmerizing visual experience and the feminist content. It is a unique twist to coming-of-age stories. It is all about female agency in a world that sees Bella more mature than she is. That's very true. My read tells me that she ends the movie at around 18 years old. She starts touching herself like any toddler, but her body response is sort of a full-formed woman as she orgasms. Later, she is discovering her sexuality. Most teenage females think about sex a lot, explore their bodies, the meaning of their bodies. It is a highly susceptible life stage. She is on a journey to understand and explore physical sex, but she is still far from understanding the abstract love and other ways of feeling happiness, which feels like the whole point of Martha's character, brackets the lady on the boat. The last section for me was crucial to understand Victoria already had sexual inclinations not accepted by her husband and by the times. As her husband states, she always had troubles with her sexuality. I also really enjoy the fact that not all men are terrible. It's a very interesting movie about growing up, exploring the world, returning home, and finding one's groove in life. That was very well written.
I agree.
Really like that. Yeah, lots of interesting thoughts there. The Holdovers was a relaxing... It's sort of like sexually... It has so much to say sexually.
Poor Things, yes.
Yeah, and it's almost a bit... an experience watching it, especially for the first time. Like, where do we mean here, and what does all this mean? So much of it is funny and sensationalist, a little bit shocking, a little bit threatening. So there's a lot to unpack there, but I actually really like what you said about that. The Holdovers was a relaxing breath. Breathe?
Breath.
Yeah, but it said breathe with an E.
Should be breath.
Holdovers was a relaxing breathe, an easing storytelling with great value content. We are all going through something. We all come from somewhere and have fears and reserves. It is a delicate portrait of different suffering and joy in every character. I'm cheering for Devine for the Oscars because as much as I like Emily Blunt, her performance in Oppenheimer is not deserving of an award. Part of what I value in acting is the dynamic between the actors in the scene. The responsiveness in the play, the dance, chemistry is hard to act. A face in the camera in a close-up feels shallower to me. I realize now that it's been almost a year from the last time I wrote, but I'm always here talking to you in my head. Cheers, Adriana, the 40 plus Brazilian woman texting from the north of Germany.
Yes, our North German contingent. Our North German contingent. Absolutely. Glad to have you still on board, Adriana.
Thank you so much, Adriana.
Fantastic.
Lovely email.
And three films for the price of one there. This next email is from Matt, who writes in and says, "Hi lads, Matt here again. Hope you've had a good start to the year. The other day, for the first time in forever, I was channel surfing and came across one of my favorite Tom Cruise films, Jerry Maguire.
Nice.
I think it may be my second favorite, just behind Top Gun Maverick.
Ooh, what's your favorite Tom Cruise film?
Well, I haven't seen Jerry Maguire in a very long time. My favorite Tom Cruise movie... okay, I'm trying to think franchise or non-franchise.
Mm. I'm A Few Good Men.
Yeah, he's good that...
It's about my favorite Tom Cruise performance, I think.
He's quite good in Rain Man. No, my favorite Tom... Okay, that's a better question.
Performance versus film, actually. It's a different conversation.
My favorite Tom Cruise performance is probably Magnolia. Have you seen that?
Oh, no, but I've heard,
really,
yeah.
Really against type. Like,
I should watch that. I do
one like of his most interesting roles. Good in The Bourne on the 4th of July. Mm.
He's very good in Valkyrie as well.
Yes. Minority Report.
Yeah.
Also a good film.
Does it age well, Minority Report?
Probably, because it's got touch technology.
Yeah, but exactly why it wouldn't age.
Oh,
and not the tech in it, more I can't picture that film. I can't place that film very well in my head.
We'll have to do a rewatch at some point. Anyway, also worth noting whatever I think or mention of Top Gun Maverick, I immediately do an impression of Al Pacino once upon a time in Hollywood. Oh, what a picture.
What a picture.
Any thoughts on Jerry Maguire? Well, I've not seen it. I don't think I can even say I've seen it.
Probably seen it twice. Last time would have been 7+ years ago, I think it's great.
Don't believe it's a film you've discussed on the pod before. Hope to hear your thoughts. All the best. Keep being awesome, Matt.
I think it's a great film. I wish Tom Cruise would, especially now Mission Impossible is coming to an end, rest action Tom Cruise a little bit.
Yes.
Even do like Valkyrie, which technically is like quite an action thriller.
Bring him into the drama genre.
Bring him into drama. Like have him. You could throw Tom Cruise into Oppenheimer, and he would do a fantastic job.
Wow, that's a thought.
I'm not saying that would happen, but I feel like he is good enough to be slotted in. Yeah. Like I think Downey Jr. was slotted into Oppenheimer and really thrived.
What I do like about Nolan is that the way he does cast very interestingly.
Yeah,
and he really I can see his thought process when he's talked about it, like. With Matthew McConaughey in Interstellar, was like, it was before he said it was not due to the reconnaissance or anything. It's that he saw McConaughey as like this kind of space cowboy, someone who was like a maverick pilot, but maybe slightly, you know, because he's Southern, is slightly out of the intellectual elite of NASA. Mm. With Robert Downey Jr., he said he always thought he was an interesting actor, charismatic, and wanted to... I don't know, I just think he's very involved.
Met him for a role in Batman Begins, pre-Batman Begins.
No, met...
Downey Jr., it didn't go anywhere. I think it was potentially...
They stayed friends, did they? They seemed to have
I think it would have been potentially to play Scarecrow, which Cillian Murphy, ironically, got.
Oh, yeah.
Because Cillian Murphy did a screen test for Batman, which you can find online. It's quite interesting. This next one is from Madeline, who writes in subject, back at it again. Hey, boys, Mads again from Aotearoa. Aotearoa. Try and read that aloud without the pronunciation spelled out this time, George. Aotearoa.
It's Aotearoa.
Aotearoa.
Aotearoa. New Zealand.
Aotearoa.
Aotearoa.
Coming from my side of the world, I cannot put through an email without recommending you to watch Boy Swallows Universe. It came out in January and is an Australian TV show with the most wicked storyline that has been super refreshing to watch. I won't put any spoilers in, but the show is about two brothers who grow up in 1980s Brisbane and the realities of how drugs can affect all generations within a family, then stems further into more interesting territory. It's one of the finest made shows I've seen in a few years. Just finished watching it as I'm writing this email and I have tears in my eyes.
Wow.
Sounds beautiful. As for Poor Things, I may be one of the only people who are quite put off by the film. I haven't seen any of Yorgos Lanthimos' films, however, had heard of a couple of them. I could definitely say there were parts about the film, humour, cinematography, dialogue, that I found really interesting and enjoyable to watch. However, overall, I didn't enjoy how on edge I felt during the entire film. I've been tossing up whether it's the combination of the uneasy soundtrack, absurdism that came through the cinematography, and how those two interacted with the overuse of sex throughout Bella's whole life, or whether it wasn't a film for me. I would agree with James that it got to a point point where I was like, we've seen this already. We know how grotesque the mindset of males interacting with Bella are, and it's not adding much other than further putting the audience at a lack at a point of ick slash disturbance. I would say I would have left the theatre feeling more wowed if there wasn't so much to feel ick about, haha, but to each their own. Mm. Interesting, different takes on poor things there. I have like had that feeling when I was watching it, but so much of it I think is breathtaking. Last thing to top it all off, going back a few podcasts, I also really disliked the Hunger Games film. I watched it having not seen any of the Hunger Games trilogy in years. I was constantly laughing at the singing, not singing, not that it was that bad, just really took you out of the film.
Yeah, you hate it.
It's awful singing. And also didn't, like, technically very good singing.
But awful.
Misplaced.
Point, yeah.
Also didn't care about any of the characters, same. There wasn't one person that I was like, ooh, they need to survive. Yeah. I would have loved to, I wanted them to die.
Yeah, you would have
wanted them to die. Anyways, speech over. Keep up the good work, lads. Loving your podcast. Lots of love from another one of your sirens. Mads, smiley face.
This next email is about Society of the Snow, which we reviewed a few weeks ago, and a lot of people talking about. This is from Francesca, who says, hello, James and George, long-term listener, first time emailing in. I just listened to your episode on Society of the Snow and love how well George sold the movie. This is an epic story everyone in the Spanish-speaking world has heard about over the years and grew up knowing, especially if you're in South America. I just want to clarify something that George said about where it was filmed. Bayona mentioned in various interviews that the Andes and the Glacier shots were filmed where the actual plane crash happened, but due to how expensive and risky it would have been to bring the equipment, actors and crew to film on location, they shot instead on a ski resort in Spain. Oh, fair enough. Their amazing VFX team then edited in the Andes footage to make it seem like they filmed at the crash site.
Wow.
I would recommend you watch the 30-minute documentary Netflix have released a few weeks ago on how they made the movie. The film took 10 years to be made initially because no big studio was willing to fund the key elements of the film. It had to be in Spanish with unknown local actors with a Uruguayan accent. 11 days after its release on Netflix, the movie had 51 million views, reaching the all-time top 10 biggest non-English language films list. I don't work in the film industry, but shouldn't the success of this movie be proof that films in Spanish, particularly Latin American stories, are worth investing in? Love the show and have loads of fun playing along with your games. Fran, absolutely. Like, I mean... It just goes to show that it's the quality. People will follow a good story. If the story is good and the filmmaking is good, people will flock to it. Doesn't matter what language is it in. Doesn't matter if they have to watch subtitles. It also does have
that Netflix elevator pitch appeal. It's like plane crash in the middle of nowhere. They have to survive, as well as being a very excellent and moving tribute to that film and the events.
It's funny. In 10 years, we've gone from The Impossible, which J.A. Bayona directed, which had Naomi Watts and Ewan McGregor.
Tom Holland.
But was originally about, Tom Holland, you're right, was originally about, that's based on a Spanish family's experience.
But was anglicized
into being Naomi Watts and Ewan McGregor to make it a mass market thing. And it just goes to, if you just keep it true, be true.
Authenticity.
It sells.
This last one is from Dan, who writes in, all of us strangers in Gibraltar, and says, hello, George and James. It's I again, your number one listener slash fan slash friend from Gibraltar.
Hey.
I'm just writing to yourselves in regarding the average cinema experience we currently have out here. With just a solitary two-screen cinema in the middle of the town where the film releases are beyond average. If you want to watch extended drag-outs of Mean Girls and popular films, fill your boots, but there's very little in terms of variety. Having said that, I did manage to see All of Us Strangers last night on my own at this particular cinema. Much to my amazement and wow, I have never in my days experienced such a visceral, raw gut punch of a heartbreaker. What a cinematic masterpiece. I was drowning in every emotion throughout the entire piece, the acting, flawless. The 80s, 90s music, simplistic, yet a huge part of the evocative sadness. Scott and Mescal were tremendous in every sense of the word, as were Foy and Bell. I felt the cinema in devastation, a 34-year-old man crying uncontrollably as I navigated my moped back home. Tears streaming into my hoodie, I arrived home, then had the overwhelming need to contact every close loved one and family member to check in with them via text or call, which after hours managed to calm my soul. This morning, trying to piece together why this film evokes such a heartbreaking turn in my weekend has baffled me beyond words. I've never had a reaction to a film like this before. Sure, I've cried, I've laughed, I've been mind-boggled by classics over the years, but never anything like this. Is it just me that's felt like this? No, we're all heartbroken.
Yeah.
Anyway, I still adore your podcast. It gets me through every hellish week here. Thank you, guys. Also, James, sparkling water is incredible. Enough of that scuba tank pish. I thank you. Your friend, Dan. Dan, thank you for that lovely email.
I have to say, what's good about doing the show sometimes is that you can just tell, I think, quite truthfully, the temperature of how a film is laying with an audience by how many emails we get in about something.
Totally.
And All of Us Strangers, we did get a lot of...
Same with Poor Things, we got so many.
A lot of passion.
Sorry, past lives.
Past lives, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And you just get an overflowing of feeling in it. And that's really great. Guys, we have loads of other emails to read out. We will try and get to them. I think it's worth saying we are at the point now, 2.5 years into doing the podcast, but we do get a lot of emails in.
Yeah.
And we do try and read all of them, but don't be offended if your email doesn't get read out. It doesn't mean we didn't like you. It's just we're cut for time. It's production stuff. We are going to try and read out some emails in the bonus that comes out this week when we're talking about fair play. But don't be dispirited. Continue to write in because we love to hear
from you. Some people are just sending us what they've seen recently, which is great. Love to know, but it doesn't necessarily, not necessarily interesting for everyone else.
Yeah. And obviously some people are writing in with reviews of films we've just covered. So it's very current and contemporary. So it's important. So anyway, let's finish with the emails now and go on, James.
With a game.
Yes.
George,
yes.
As always, Pop Kitchen ends...
with a game.
With a game. I have two games for you. One game is A Caster's Countdown, which we'll end with.
Classic.
The other one is a film title movie opposite.
Oh, another classic.
I will give you the opposite, the antonyms of a film title, and you have to tell me which film it is.
Deal.
I'm running out of films. I look at, like, I type in films into Google, and, like, I just choose a year, like, year, just because I can't, it's like someone says, name a book. I need to just like be confronted with 50 films and they go, what's, yeah, I'll do that. I'm running out.
Do you think you've repeated yourself at all?
I think we have repeated ourselves a couple of times. I think like when one person did it and the other person, but it's still fun.
Sure.
But I'm really trying to look for films that work with an opposite. And some films some words don't have opposites. You have to get creative. But anyway, George, just in case you've never played before, if, for example, if I said,
After Sun.
Sorry?
If you did After Sun, you'd
It'd
say
be like
Before Moon.
That would be it. All right, George, are you ready?
I'm ready.
You have to guess the film from its opposite film title. Ready? Day Walk.
Night Crawler. Night Swim?
Yes.
Night Swim, yes.
Lamborghini.
Ferrari.
Yes. Someone, including me.
Anyone but you?
Yes. The Unremarkable Capture.
The Great Escape.
Yes. Unprepared Observer 2.
Unprepared Observer 2. One something. Ready Player One.
Yes. Future Deaths.
Past Lives.
Yes. Loki, Hate and Lightning.
Thor, God, Love and Thunder.
Yes. The Destroyer.
The Survivor. The Savior. The Creator. The
Creator. Ugly is not confident.
Beauty is not...
Ugly is confident. Ugly is not confident.
Ugly is not confident. Beauty, ugly. Beauty is...
Beau is afraid. First Day in Suburbia.
Hang on. That doesn't work.
Carry on. First Day in Suburbia.
Last Night in Soho.
Yes. Pepper Extinguish.
Salt Burn.
Yes. Black Silence.
White Noise.
Yes. That's it. There you go.
There we go. Well done. Yeah. Thank you.
I made this 5 minutes before you came.
I can tell. Yep.
All right. Last up, we have a Caster's Countdown. There are 20 members of this cast.
Oh, my God.
There's actually more, but I'm reading out all the big ones. Okay. So you've got a long time to try and get it.
Yep.
Are you ready, George? You have to guess the film from its cast. Joanna Page. Will Arnett. Nick Mohammed.
Okay.
Jim Broadbent, Jesse Buckley, Jason Mantzoukas, Marion Cotillard, thank you, Francis de la Tour, Antonio Banderas, Michael Sheen, Craig Robinson, John Cena, Kumail Nanjiani. Ralph Fiennes.
What?
Rami Malek. Emma Thompson. Octavia Spencer.
What?
Selena Gomez. Tom Holland.
What?
And last one, Robert Downey Jr. Does that give it away? And why it's a cheat, because
it's
all of those actors are not visible. They're all voice
actors.
The animals.
That is a little bit of a cheat.
It's a cheat, but what a cast.
Yeah. I mean, now I can...
It's a huge cheat.
I was trying to visualize them being on screen together, but they're not.
No. Because I think like huge, broad comedy? No.
It's like Robert Downey Jr. finished with Marvel and he needed, and he had, this was his first film post.
It was, wasn't it?
And it's like, he kind of like, it was like, and everyone's like, God, that was horrible. Now you've got that out your system. Mm. Why didn't you go do Oppenheimer?
He has publicly said it was one of the biggest like miscalculations of his career.
Really?
Yeah, like he just misjudged and not, I think he like the Marvel represented a really big comfort for him and he didn't want to depart from it. And he ended up doing this and...
But that's the thing. You do that. Mm. You have a minor failure. You exorcise it out of yourself, and then you go do Oppenheimer. Then look at him now.
Did it come out before Endgame?
Yes, came out. No. It came out after Endgame. Yeah. It was early 2020. It came out, I think.
Yeah. Wow.
And
there you go.
And it did do little for people.
Yeah. Even looking back at it, it doesn't age well in terms of its visuals.
I have the whole thing, James. Any film with a talking animal. Except Paddington.
Yes.
Most films are talking animals, I should say. When there's a lot of talking animals, is the thing. Paddington's fine, it's one animal.
I like Dr. Dolittle with Eddie Murphy.
Do you?
I think so.
Really?
Maybe.
No.
Maybe I was young and I found it funny that the animals talked, that he's screaming around.
I think there's probably a good horror concept in there.
I bet Ari Aster could make an animal talk and it'd be horrifying.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah.
Those were the games this week on this episode of Pulp Kitchen. We will, as I've said, a couple of times, but we're going to be doing a bonus for that movie Fair Play that's on Netflix. If you've seen it, if you haven't seen it, check it out anyway. We might be doing some emails as well.
This is coming out on Valentine's Day. Have a great Valentine's Day. If you're in a relationship, enjoy. If not, maybe you're going on a hot date. And if not,
watch a film.
We just put out a video which with great film creators in our space of the best romantic comedy of all time. Look out for that on our social media if you're looking for a pick.
Yeah.
We are Theories by T. Ailish, Raiders of the Lost podcast, and Henry.
Yeah.
So go check it out on the feed. Bit of rom-com picks for you.
Absolutely. Other than that, James?
Guys, don't forget we post new episodes of the show every single Wednesday. Thank you for spending your time with us. We will see you next week.
And thank you for following us on the socials. Many of you have arrived at the show, having discovered us on socials. Please continue to follow us there and like and subscribe. And we are posting, as we just said, all this new content that's not coming out on the show, it's coming out in the feeds.
I would like to make a specific call out to you, the people listening on Apple Podcasts. Yes, you. I'm speaking exactly to you. Yes. Please give us a rating. Stop what you're doing. Give us a little review, a little 5 stars. Yes. Let people know that this is a great show. We've got loads of love on Spotify. I'd love even more love on the Apple Podcast. That would be great.
Really helps us grow.
Does. See you next week.
Have a great week, guys. Bye.